It's so important for leaders at the top of organizations to keep learning, stay sharp, grow their networks. To help our audience better do this in a more simplified, personalized, and meaningful way, Becker's Healthcare has launched MyBHC. It's your trusted Becker's Healthcare experience and more, with content, connections, events, and learning opportunities. Join the community free of charge at www.my.beckershospitalreview.com, and we'll see you there.
This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to visit with Dr. Mark Adams. Dr. Adams is the Chief Medical Officer of the El Camino Health System. He's going to talk today about himself, the system, where he's most focused today and excited, and a lot more. Dr. Adams, can you take a second to introduce yourself and tell us about the El Camino Health System?
Yeah, sure, Scott. Be happy to. I'm a chief medical officer. I've been with El Camino Health System about 5 years. I formerly was a thoracic and vascular surgeon for many years, took care of a lot of patients, but then moved into administrative work. And aside from my medical officer roles that I've been with several different organizations, I also served as the Washington State Medical Association president and also served on the American Hospital Association board. And then finally, I've served for many years on Blue Cross Blue Shield boards based in the Pacific Northwest. So I think it sort of has helped me have a pretty good perspective from different lenses at what's happening in healthcare. El Camino Health System is based in Silicon Valley, which is a fairly, as everyone knows, a unique geographical area surrounded by Apple, Netflix, Google, you name it, hundreds of entrepreneurs everywhere. And so we really have benefited from that in many different ways. But the El Camino Health System has been known for its high quality of care. We're one of the IBM Watson top 100 hospitals in the United States, only two in California, by the way. And we've also had the coveted Everest Award for 2 years in a row, which is an award given among the top 100 for the fastest improvement in quality and safety of care. We have two acute care hospitals, and then we also have a psychiatric hospital, and we have a women's hospital. I think we provide a lot of diverse services. And, as I said, we really want to continue to be on the forefront of innovative care.
Thank you. And Dr. Adams, you're sort of this brilliant leader, University of Pennsylvania Med School, University of Washington for your residencies. I mean, brilliant career. When you look at the role of chief medical officer today, back in the day, it was almost like the chief of the medical staff, it was a discipline job. It was the different pieces that went into the job, making sure people behave themselves. That job of chief medical officer has evolved so much in the last 10 to 20 years to really a leadership role in so many different ways for quality, for safety, more. Talk about yourself as chief medical officer. How do you view your mandate? What are you most focused on, most excited about?
Yeah, that's a great question, Scott. And you're right. The chief medical officer role has changed dramatically over the last couple of decades. First and foremost is taking care of patients. I mean, I have to always keep that in front of mind. And everything that we do as a health system, ultimately, we have to come back to, is this the right thing? Is this the best care for the patients, the people that we serve? And I see the chief medical officer, I sort of take that on as my responsibility is, no matter what, you have to represent the people that we care for. I think the chief medical officer have really become a key part of health system strategy. I'm involved in all of the strategic planning. And also, we form a relationship with all of the operations. Each of our service lines basically includes my role in it, as well as, again, not just making sure the quality of the care, but also thinking about planning ahead. Where do we go with the services? To me, that's a key part. And then there's also issues of liability, medical liability, general liability. I think, again, chief medical officer has kind of evolved into that role. And then lastly, you know, in my mind, one of the key parts is really to develop physician leaders. I think, you know, we really, as you see, as the healthcare has been changing the last number of years, you're seeing more and more, you know, physicians in leadership roles, operational leadership roles. And I think I try to be sure that I'm identifying and then helping to develop potential physician leaders for those future roles.
And take a moment. You're located in the heart of Silicon Valley. Everybody that comes in is a software engineer. And I know that's a huge overstatement that Silicon Valley actually includes lots of regular people, not just software technology entrepreneurs and so forth. But are there additional stakes, because people are such educated consumers in your world, in terms of taking care of people, make sure the systems take care of people well? How do you look at some of those issues?
Yeah, I think you're right. I would say not only are there a lot of software engineers, but it's an extremely diverse area. You know, the population is very diverse, which I think gives us a little bit of a leg up when we start thinking about health equity. You know, we have a proving ground right here, because not only is our you know, our providers, all of our healthcare workers, and again, as you mentioned, all of our patients are very diverse in backgrounds and education. And I think that for me, having patients who are educated, engineers, software engineers, whatever they are, it keeps us on our toes. I think people have high expectations. And so, you know, we need to rise to that level to meet those expectations. I personally find it very invigorating. I think that, you know, people can look at it as a threat. I look at it as an advantage, because it really keeps us on the forefront of, you know, of whether it's technology or new care methods, new care approaches, new interventions. Keeps us sort of always looking ahead.
When you think about, I can't go through a discussion today without somebody mentioning artificial intelligence or new ways of technology. Someone just sent me a note on a book they had read, and the ChatGPT description of the book, and the actual description was fantastic, actually. But tell us, how do some of these things play into the role of chief medical officer today? Whether adapting or starting to think about, or how do you start to think about some of those technology changes that are going on in the role of just chief medical officer and providing care to a large system, through a large system?
Yeah, well, Scott, it's definitely also forefront of my mind. There's clearly ways that artificial intelligence can help us provide better care, but there's also hazards with it and limitations. And I think what we're finding, you know, we have embraced AI. You know, I think a great area of use is things like imaging, right? So applications of AI to look at images, especially as images have gotten more and more complicated, you know, makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, there are complexities in trying to, you know, make decisions with patients that we're finding AI is not as useful and has more limitations. You know, there's something about, you know, just looking at a person. Once you've sort of had experience taking care of patients, there are things just by looking at a patient that you can learn rapidly. That's the beauty of the human mind, processes things that are not just sort of A to B and linear. And I think that, so I think we have to be careful. We have to balance, you know, use AI where it can be beneficial, but understand that AI cannot replace the human mind when it comes to healthcare, perhaps in other areas.
Let me ask you a question about that. And obviously we're early stage in terms of AI really being able to diagnose and take care of people in the right way. But you mentioned something a moment ago, which is the visit with the patient. And just from any type of area of the world one is in, whether it's business or medicine, we all know that the actual visiting with a person, the visiting with it, and, you know, it might be a customer, might be an attendee, might be whatever it is, but you can get so much out of a very short visit with somebody by really visiting with them versus by phone or by virtual or by whatever other sort of, you know, method you use. How much do you think has been lost in terms of that visit, that intimacy with the patient when we've gone to telemedicine, virtual health versus in-person visits? And obviously, even though there's been something lost in it, at least my perception, there's a huge cost benefit in the convenience and the trying to reduce burnout for physicians and so forth, and allowing telehealth and really sponsoring and encouraging virtual health. But how much is lost in that time for connection that you're talking about?
There's a risk. There is a risk of losing some of that. I think a lot of these alternative methods can be very useful. But again, it's still, maybe it's because I'm a surgeon, but there is a certain amount of information that one gets from having contact with a person that it's just hard to replicate that outside of that, you know, interpersonal interaction. And so I think we need to be careful that we don't lose that. I think that the idea that every person can be, you know, diagnosed by just having them have imaging or having, you know, some kind of, you know, evaluation that's very mechanistic, it's not right, because there are things still that can be picked up just by that interaction in person.
Well, it's that open discussion, an open meeting that allows you not just to mechanically say we need to do these three things, but better understand what's going on with the person and so forth.
Exactly.
Take a moment on and sort of physician staffing trends, nurse staffing trends. Is that just in the long run a losing math battle because we've got a million physicians and 330 million people? How do we sort of solve this gap between this ratio gap of physicians to people? Aside from technology, is there a way to produce more physicians at a quicker pace? Is there some way to solve some of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we certainly are not immune to the pressures of, you know, getting enough providers to care for our patients. I think you point out right away that there is a long pipeline to produce physicians. And over the years, you know, there have been ups and downs. You know, and I think that trying to sort of regulate that is difficult because, you know, just turning on and off the tap, you know, doesn't work. And so we definitely have had significant shortages now. Things like areas like anesthesia, radiology, pathology. I was just looking at the, you know, the number of radiologists being produced per year versus the openings for radiologists. It's about 5 to 1. And so there's 5 openings for every new radiologist that's being educated. And so we do need to look at that. And that's where, frankly, I think these alternate, you know, whether it's AI or, you know, other approaches can be very helpful to be a, you know, a relief valve for that. But, you know, we still need to, you know, make sure that we're generating those practitioners that we need. And honestly, I think that the attraction for people to enter some of those fields may have diminished somewhat. And I think we need to think again about making sure that we're valuing those people in a way that people want to enter those fields.
No, like 100%, and so true. Dr. Adams, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just a tremendous guest. I appreciate your time so much. And what a remarkable career. And right in the heart of Silicon Valley now for the last several years. Must be so interesting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Scott, and all the things that you do. Thanks.